FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's June 4th, 2018. Well, if you're involved in the show, if you enjoy participating, send us an email. We're going to read some questions, John Rubino and I, during this segment. Again, for your reference, kl@kerrylutz.com. So it's time for John Rubino of dollarcollapse.com. John, we got some questions to answer and some irate people because you confused several Italian names and gave a misleading impression that, I don't know, that the Italian government's unstable.
Hey, Kerry. Well, that's not a misleading impression. The Italian government will always be unstable because that's the nature of that culture. But I did say that when they were negotiating the people who were going to be in the new government in Italy, that the president had rejected the coalition party's choice for premier. But he had actually rejected the choice for finance minister. And for a while, it looked like they were not going to be able to put the government together and there was going to be a new election, but they managed it. And the guy who was rejected is now in the cabinet, but in a different position from finance minister. So sorry about that. It is hard to keep track of these things. The way other countries negotiate the creation of a government is so different from the way it works in the U.S. that that it's fun to watch, but it's hard to follow.
So, yeah, well, we in the U.S., it makes so much more sense because, look, Donald Trump is president, right?
Yeah, yeah, and he picks the cabinet.
Yeah,
and that's
It's all done. So you have at least a cohesive, in theory, a cohesive government for 4 years, whereas in Europe, with all these parliamentary systems, you have these flash elections, like in Canada. Your government there is good for 5 years, but at any time, the government can call a snap election and they can vote them in for another 5 years. So it's a minimum 5-year term, but then it becomes a confidence election, a reconfirmation election almost, and they could keep going and going until the people get fed up with them, which seems to happen more and more lately, because Justin from Canada is an interesting caricature of progressivism and liberalism and person kind with all of its flaws. So we got a letter here from Jesse, and Jesse says, love your program. Old Bessie and I listen all the time. Question for John is, understanding the causes of the Great Depression, wealth gap, credit creation, overages, wild ass speculation, poor central bank decision making, what are the differences or similarities in the depression we face that could generate a different outcome for the middle class? Is this time potentially not different, and in what ways?
Well, it's probably different, although, you know, a lot of the stuff leading up to it is the same. But back then, gold was money. Money was gold. So you didn't have the potential for a hyperinflation where a country just decides to borrow as much as it needs to and then just finances its ever-increasing debt with newly created currency. You can't do that under a gold standard. You can do it under a fiat currency standard. So that's the big difference. Right now, we have less of a deflation potential out there, although a mountain of debt is very deflationary. But the potential for this thing to spin out of control is on the inflationary side, probably because governments are taking that kind of action. As soon as things start to slow down a bit, you see more QE and greater money creation and lower interest rates. And without a doubt, we will see that again next time. You know, we'll have a recession in the not too distant future because we're 8 or 9 years into a recovery and stock prices are at record levels and bond prices are still pretty close to record levels and house prices are at record levels. In other words, we're late in the cycle, and the cycle will turn, and we'll have a recession, and you'll see governments respond to that, not with austerity, but with massive new money creation. And that creates the conditions in which you have a currency crisis as the relief valve. In other words, if governments are controlling interest rates, which would normally be the way the markets react to massive currency creation, you will see a plunge in the value of the currencies that are being overinflated. So that, I think, is a real danger out there, that this time around, currency values fall. We have a currency crisis that takes the tools of monetary policy away from central banks, because if your currency is falling, you can't really save yourself by creating new currency. That just makes it worse. And that's probably what we're looking at out there. In the Depression, that wasn't an issue, because since gold was money, money actually got more valuable during the course of the decade. So I think it's a good chance that what's coming is going to be a lot more chaotic than just a debt-driven depression. This is going to be what you see in Argentina or someplace, or Venezuela, where things just totally spin out of control. And the currency is the focal point of the crisis, which means that you protect yourself with real assets. When the thing that we measure the price of real assets is distorted by bad monetary policy, then real assets are the thing to own, because they go up relative to those bad currencies. So this scenario leads you back to gold and silver as a way to protect yourself.
Mm-hmm. So this time is going to be different, because we're not on a gold standard, at least theoretically, but we went off the gold standard during the last Great Depression. So here they've just been printing away, or attempting to print away, your problems. And eventually that just creates more problems and compounds the situation, right?
Yeah, well, we stayed on a gold standard in the U.S., although we devalued by making gold illegal to own and then
private,
calling a bunch of it in and then changing the price relative to the dollar. But we still had a connection to gold that made it hard just to print huge amounts of new currency. This time around, we don't have anything like that. And these guys are basically in charge of, unlimited credit cards. They are able to create as much new currency as they want to. And human nature being what it is, that's what they're doing. So that's the difference between then and now. And it's an inflationary difference that leads us to protect ourselves with inflation hedges.
All right. So this reminds me of a story I read recently on the web, of course, that I have every reason to believe is actually true. And it's entitled, 24-year-old Australian man spent $2 million in like a year and a half. And it was written in Esquire magazine, and it's entitled When Milky Got His Money. And I will put a link to that in the show notes. And what this kid did, he had a house and he just, he had a mortgage account, and he would transfer the payment from his savings account to pay his mortgage. And one time he didn't have enough money in the account and he just did it anyway. And it went through, no calls, no nothing. And he said, gee, that's interesting. So he kept doing it and doing it. And without boring you with all the details, he found himself, I think this is in Australia. Yeah. He found himself like on the Gold Coast, to $2 million in hock. And the next thing he knows, he's arrested and he's convicted. He's going to go to jail, and he appeals it. And they all said, you're nuts. You can't win. You can't win. Well, it turns out that the bank knowingly approved his overdrafts. I mean, not knowingly, but they just approved them. It required a human being to intervene and approve the overdraft, and they kept doing it. And as a result, there was no deceit involved or anything else. There was no embezzlement. He just asked for an overdraft, and they gave it to him. And he was transferring the money into his PayPal account after he paid off his mortgage with all the overdrafts. Then he sold the house. Then he says, well, I need an account to put the money into, but it has to be a debit type account. It can't be a bank account. So he figures out that he can transfer overdrafts into PayPal, and he runs up $2 million and was in jail, but eventually beat the rap. And guess what he's going to do now, John?
What?
Just take a wild guess.
Declare bankruptcy?
No, because the bank has said, oh, I didn't tell you. The bank said, we're not going to chase you for the deficiency because they got such bad publicity. They want to forget that this thing ever happened. No, Milky is in law school now because he won the unwinnable case. And now he's very full of himself and thinks he can work this magic on others' behalfs.
Well, I have a line of credit on my checking account. Yeah. I wonder if the same thing.
I don't think they'll let you run up to 2 million, but I think he's making a big mistake because any idiot could be a lawyer. Look, I was. I think that he should become a central banker.
Yeah, well, that is a pretty good metaphor for central banking in today's world, where everybody has effectively an unlimited credit card.
Yeah.
Or all governments do, at least.
You think?
Yeah.
I think
it's a question of degree rather than quality of action. You know, he just did something a little more extreme than what lots of people are out there doing right now.
But kind of brilliant, though, huh? That he beat the rap representing himself. You know, that's the amazing part. He beat the rap. It just doesn't work that way, you know? So I think the central bankers maybe could learn a little something from Milky, too, because the key is he blew through the money. I mean, they recaptured whatever he owned. He had been ripped off by a friend, took $150,000. It doesn't matter. The point is that the guy, you know, not only did he get to enjoy the spoils of his efforts for quite a while, for like a couple of years, but then turn around once they were onto him, he beat them in court and he was right. He was totally right on the law. But sometimes it takes a non-lawyer to see what a lawyer can't see. That's the moral of the story. Anyways, So central banker, I think maybe Powell could hire him as a personal assistant. When the debt's getting a little too big and it's starting to threaten things, just send in Mikey. Or Milky. Send in Milky. Milky will handle it. Milky will save us, right? You can't make this stuff up, John, you know? And it's just like our central bankers. They're on a binge. They'll never be able to pay it back. And, you know, they'll look for Milky to put things in order, right?
Yeah. Well, that is the big question. What happens when we can't pay our debts back anymore? Mm-hmm. And that's out there somewhere. Actually, Carrie, there's an interesting kind of corollary to that the Wall Street Journal just published today about how value-oriented investors are just dying out there because there's so much money sloshing around in the system. It's pouring into hot tech stocks and widening the gap between value investing and basically speculation, which is, you know, what you get when you're buying growth stocks at these levels. And how money managers who have a value orientation are faced with extinction or adaptation, where they start buying tech stocks too. And that's a really interesting late cycle kind of phenomenon that you see at the peaks of cycles when value investing doesn't work anymore. And when value investors start either going bust or changing their stripes and becoming growth investors. And that's yet another sign that we're at the end of this cycle, because that's the kind of thing that happens right at the peak of cycles. Mm-hmm. So I think the turn is coming at some point in the not too distant future where these valuations just don't work anymore. And whether the impact is mainly felt in the bond market or the stock market or real estate is unclear right now, but we are in kind of a 2006, 2007, 2008 environment right now where things aren't working anymore. And you're seeing people who, you know, 20 or 30 years in the business of value investing who are now buying Netflix or something like that.
Yeah.
And that's a sign that we're towards the end here. So there are a lot of signs like that, but this is a new one, and it's an interesting one.
It's that old, if you can't beat them, join them kind of capitulation. It's a bad sign, and it's not going to end well. You can be sure of that. But, hey, you know what, John? We could be totally wrong. This thing could go on for 2 or 3 years more, maybe longer, because a trend in motion continues until it stops, right?
Well, this has gone on a lot longer than it should have.
Right. My point.
In both kinds of scales, you know, the whole thing should have fallen apart in 2008. And this cycle within the bigger super cycle probably shouldn't have lasted this long either, based on valuations. And the difference this time is that we've got central banks creating immense amounts of new currency out there. The U.S. is tightening a little bit, but a lot of other central banks are still really loose. You know, the Japanese central bank and to an extent the European central bank and definitely the Chinese central bank are all still creating a lot of new currency and tossing it out into the global financial system. This money has to go somewhere, so it's going into hot assets. Yeah. But again, valuations do matter at some point.
I wasn't aware of that. We're at the point where they mattered
in the past.
I didn't know that, John. I thought as long as momentum carries you, then everything is fine and don't worry about it. Just get in and get out as fast as you can with your scalp intact.
Yeah. Well, that is the way it feels towards the end of a bubble. But in retrospect, you always end up looking back and going, oh my God, I should have shorted all of this stuff. I shouldn't have owned any of it, you know, at that peak in that month on that day. And we don't know what the month and the day will be, but we know that there will be one. There will be a time when we look back and say, okay, that was the time to bail and to start shorting this market really aggressively. Mm-hmm. We might be there. Or as you said, it might be a while longer. I don't know, but we're at valuation levels, which in the past have been the levels where you really wanted to short this market like crazy.
Yeah, I know. And it's dangerous. But look, when you see companies like Tesla literally going to the moon, no pun intended. Yes, pun intended. Then you really got to. You got to look at this thing and say, maybe, just maybe, something not so good is going to happen here. And get ready for the inevitability here, right?
Well, that's the sad thing for value-oriented money managers is that they, a lot of the time, they'll start switching gears and in order to survive, start buying growth stocks just at the time when their original strategy was the best thing to do. You know, they had they stayed with their growth stock or with their value stock strategy, they would have outperformed for the next 4 or 5 years when the cycle turns down. But a lot of them get caught at the very peak in desperation, switching to the thing that's not going to work going forward. And it's sad because it's a result of government distorting markets in ways that make it impossible for people looking at actual fundamentals to invest correctly. And so it's not the money manager's fault, and it's not individual investors' fault when they get sucked into these bubbles. It's government's fault for trying to inflate away their debts and in the process distorting the market price signaling mechanism and making capitalism not work anymore. Yeah. That's what we've been doing for going on 40 years now, and it gets worse in each cycle. This cycle is just astoundingly bad. And so probably the consequences of the mistakes we're making now are going to be horrendous when the time comes.
I can only imagine. And you can only imagine too. And look, we just keep repeating the same mistakes over and over again, but it seems like the magnitude of the mistakes are what is increasing. We don't learn anything from it. And I just wonder what would have happened in 08, 09 if they put the banks into conservatorship, split them up, and let the chips fall where they may, eliminate government backing from residential real estate, get rid of all the corporate welfare in the budget and get rid of all the welfare, where we would be today.
We would be so much healthier today if we'd done that.
It would have been worse though at the bottom. You know that. It would have been worse at the bottom.
Well, that's why they didn't do it.
Yeah.
Because they would have gotten blamed for what would have felt like an ongoing depression. Mm-hmm. Because it would have taken a few extra years for all of this stuff to get liquidated. And yes. You know what Iceland did, though? Iceland is just a few hundred thousand people, so it's not always a great example. But they had a huge banking crisis. And they put the bankers in jail. They protected bank depositors. So they didn't let the little guy get wiped out by the mm-hmm. crisis. And then they imposed new rules on the banks. And they're a pretty healthy country right now.
Yeah.
And they got through it in relatively good shape. Oh, and they stiffed their foreign creditors. So the people who had lent them a lot of money, they had to take some losses. And mm-hmm. and it worked. So had we done something like Iceland did, we'd be in way better shape now. We wouldn't have doubled our debt or quadrupled our debt, exactly. depending on which section of our balance sheet you're looking at. And we wouldn't be facing a crisis, which just based on the numbers is potentially a lot worse than 2008, 2009.
It's frightening. It's really yeah. frightening what it could turn into.
And it is.
I know. We're the stopped clock brigade here. But the fact is, it potentially is going to be far worse than anything imaginable, you know, than anything that we could have ever dreamed in our wildest dreams or nightmares. Right. It really could be really bad.
Well, for the people who are trusting the powers that be right now, yeah, it could be very bad, because if all your savings are in the local fiat currency or bonds that pay you in the local fiat currency, when the inevitable monetary reset happens, in other words, the only way out for these guys is to devalue their currencies really aggressively one way or another. That hurts you. That impoverishes you. So a lifetime of savings evaporates. That's going to be terrible. The people who own real stuff might come through it in reasonably good shape, unless governments decide on some kind of a windfall profits tax and they want to share the pain by also sharing the benefits accruing to the people who made the right decisions. You know, that we can't know. But looking just at which asset classes will do well versus which won't, you definitely want to be as far away from these fiat currencies as possible and as deeply into real assets that will be protected from this when it comes.
Very important. Anyway, John, that's it for this week. Make sure you check out John's work over at dollarcollapse.com. Sign up for his newsletter. We get it. It gives you the latest update on newly released articles. Hey, check out financialsurvivalnetwork.com. New newsletter coming out within the next 24 hours, I promise. And I'm writing an article that I hope is going to really inspire you to do your best to be the greatest person you can be. And the example might be a little controversial, but the wisdom isn't. And look, send us emails. We, as you see, we answer everything. I'm going to start answering a lot of them on the show from now on. We'll even do shows devoted to answering your questions. And the email address for your personal reference is kl@carrielutz.com, Twitter feed @CarrieLutz, and the Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. John, till next week.
Thanks, Carrie. See ya.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.